So today we have Calvin French in this live in the studio.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really nice studio.
Thanks.
This couch is super, super lush.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that kind of maroony kind of leather.
Mm-hmm. It's smooth.
It's very.
It's also a little bit furry.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
I
noticed
that.
Like, it's very fine.
It's almost like a suede. Is it kind of like a suede?
No.
No?
No. What are you talking about? You're crazy. Get out of here. Yeah.
Sorry. I'm only familiar with the second-rate materials for couches.
So how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. How are... We're off to a great start.
Yes.
So, the Real Texas is your latest release. And it's been out for how long? Not quite a month or over a month?
Over a month. It's been out for about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
and how well has it been doing? Because it's kind of like your first... Is it your first commercial release?
Well,
I believe you had at least one other commercial release.
I had one other game that I made, which is like kind of a sad story, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I had another game called Venture the Void, which was... pretty neat, technically, I think, but, it didn't really do very well. It didn't sell very many copies, but, that is okay, because it was only 5 years of my life. But no, The Real Texas is doing good, much, much better than anything I've done before, and people like it, and that's mostly what I care about, and it's selling enough, so it's sold enough that I could quit my job here, so that is... perfect. I mean, that's all I really want, so, yeah.
So what was your job previous? I assume you were employed, but also working on Real Texas at the same time?
Yeah, so I had a job as a database admin, basically, a web programmer for a company that did, like, environmentally friendly housing stuff. So it's kind of, actually kind of cool. I had that job for about 5 years, working usually more like three days a week, and then the rest of the time just on Real Texas.
Well, that works out pretty reasonably then, because you're not completely smothered by your day job.
Yeah, it was good, and they were always, good about flexibility and everything there, so I definitely never took that job for granted. I always appreciated it, but it was nice to be able to quit, and full-time has been pretty awesome. I've only sort of quit 2 weeks ago, like had my last day, so I've had 2 full weeks now, and one day I was sort of doing this full-time, and I like it a lot.
So what have you actually been doing full-time? Because the big joke, of course, with indie game development is people go full-time and really they're just sitting around doing nothing. So.
It's been actually pretty good. I'm going to just turn my mic down here because I can see it clipping here. I started a project about a year and a bit ago. So, like, what I did with Real Texas is I kind of finished it, and then sent it off to some testers, and then just kind of sat on it for a while. And that was really good, because it gave me time to, like, properly look at the feedback and make some much bigger changes than I would have otherwise made. Like, I changed drastically the way the end works, and I added a complete new sort of intermediate section to the entire, like, game. Like, I added a whole other big sequence. So that was super, super good to do, because it changed the game from sort of being, like, disappointing to being really, I think, pretty satisfying. But in the meantime, I was just sort of sitting around thinking a lot. So I started another project about a year and a half ago. So full-time... I think my first week full-time work, I got a lot done. My second week, which was last week, I didn't get as much done. But this week's pretty good. So, yeah. And I have, like, I've got other projects, too, that I haven't been, like, working on as long. But I kind of, like, had it overlapped. So it was good, because when I, like, released The Real Texas, I wasn't kind of sitting around going, like, what do I do now, right?
Yeah, right. Did you have any major issues right around the time of release with the game that you had to patch immediately, or
yes.
Is it more sort of... Okay.
Yeah, I had huge issues. Well, I mean, they were huge for me. No, there were some bugs found really, really early, and I got a patch out, I think just a couple days after. It's the kind of stuff like it's not hard to fix, it's just hard to find, right? And so somebody reports it, they're like, oh, when I do this, the game crashes. I'm like, oh, shoot. I go look at it, of course, right? Crashes when I do that same thing, but like, I obviously never used that item in that particular room before. So, yeah, no, I got a patch out a couple days after, and then about a week after, I got another patch out, and that's the patch that's sort of been sitting there, and that patch is actually really good. So,
Cool.
it's like I'll have another patch out, but basically, the patch I'm working on now is more like a vanity patch.
What does that mean exactly? What are you like?
It's kind of like, well, I have the luxury of like fixing stuff and just I now that I've watched people's Let's Play, I'm like, oh geez, like I don't like what they're doing here. I mean, it's okay that people, it's always that feeling when you watch somebody play your game, but at times you're like, oh okay, this isn't really fair for this person because they've sort of taken a certain pathway through. And they missed something here, so I want to make sure that they see it. And there was a few items that, if you get those items, it changes it quite a bit. And there's pretty big pushes in that direction, but maybe not quite big enough. So I basically, with the vanity patch, I guess it's just kind of like, well, I might as well go and like change what those things that like reviewers didn't like, right? It's like if the reviewers are sort of, they didn't like this, or they felt that combat was too difficult, or whatever. Or I could watch like a Let's Play and see, what people are frustrated with. So it's like, well, I might as well just do it just so the game's better and I feel better about it. So
That seems more like a responsibility patch than a vanity patch, but
it's yeah, I think it's both. I don't I it's. It's like it's
I, but I
not
think
really
it's kind of, this is,
crashes or anything, but it's
oh,
just kind
sorry, go
of,
ahead.
yeah, it's not so much crashes, it's just more like tweaks to the battle, the combat, and tweaks to some of the items and stuff.
Yeah, but that seems to me to be sort of unique to indie games. Like, I'm not sure how many mainstream companies would go back and tweak something because they, like, felt responsible for improving players' experiences based on their personal feels of, like, I don't know. I'm not sure if there is that kind of interplay between the designer and the actual critics and the players, and then that, and having that actually lead to the game being changed. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I know exactly what, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, and I think you're right. One thing is that, like, which is also I think really cool of an indie game, it's like your market penetration is just like kind of, or my market penetration is just kind of like scratching with a fingernail. Like it's like that's all I need to get by, but it's kind of like the sheer number of PC game players out there is like huge, right? And so like fixing this really will make a difference, right? Down the road, like it's gonna improve anyone who plays it. Like I guess what I'm saying is like the nice thing about it being an independent developer is like you're not like you don't sell everything in the first 2 weeks and then you're
Yeah.
done, right? Like
There's
it's
that long
worth it,
tail. Yeah.
exactly. Like it's worth it to fix because I know that still probably like as many people that have bought it already probably will still buy it,
Yeah.
right? So I might as
That's
well.
very true. Yeah, same thing with Aquaria, and every time you port it to another platform or something, and people hear about it and they haven't heard about it before. Which
Exactly.
seems really weird, like it's 4 years old or whatever, but that happens, And then all the little fixes that we've done along the way have an impact. So, yeah, it is interesting. And it's for like real Texas, there might be, it might get on Steam at some point.
I'm
Now that that's
hoping.
all changing around and stuff.
Yeah, well, like I submitted once to Steam, and I didn't really hear back, so I was like, okay, just kind of move forward with everything. But I think like my impression of Steam is they probably want to see that you're kind of like serious about it in a business sense. This is like pure speculation, but I've seen so many games that like didn't get on Steam at first, but did after, right? So they got some positive press. They sort of worked hard to kind of like sell it on their own, and then it's like, oh, lo and behold, it's like it's on Steam. So I'll resubmit to Steam, and like I hope I get on there, but you know, there's no guarantees. But I don't know. You just kind of have to, like, I don't think you can. You don't want to like miss getting on Steam if you can, but at the same time, it's like if you're actually wanting to do it as a business, you can't be like, oh, like we'll succeed if we get on Steam, or we'll fail if we don't, right? You have to. It has to be kind of like, okay, you want it and it's awesome and it's something you shoot for, but it's like you can't control it, so you should really have a backup plan, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also not the be all end all anymore. Like, it used to be a huge deal to get on Steam, and I think it means a bit less now. Like, it's still a big deal, but more and more indie stuff is getting onto Steam, and it seems to be more frequently and stuff like that. So it's a lot more competitive than it used to be, I think. It's not like, oh, there's the one new whatever on Steam, and it's like,
that makes sense too.
So it's going to be interesting going ahead, because there's, you know, there's lots of things like that. Lots of, everything is really, really competitive, it feels like to me, like busier. There's more games coming out, more indie stuff coming out constantly. And I wonder sort of how many games are getting lost in the shuffle. Like, if something like The Real Texas came out like 10 years ago, it'd be like amazing.
Right.
It'd be like, whoa, like, how did this even get made? Like,
right. Yeah, I think that's true. But, you know, also, my impression is, like, the market seems to have grown with it. Like, the number of, like, just mainstream PC gamers that are, like, interested in indie games seems to be way, way huger. It's not, like, a niche anymore.
It's true.
So I think that's, I don't know, I think it's, I know what you mean, like, it feels crowded, but I wonder, but it at the same time, it seems like a lot of people are doing pretty well, you know?
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, hopefully it's like a diversity thing, and it's actually, you know, reaching out a broader audience and everything at the same time. That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about it.
I don't really
know. Either way, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it is fun to watch it.
It is pretty cool, yeah.
And I think we should also talk a bit about what the game is actually about, for in case anyone hasn't actually played it yet.
No, let's just talk about Steam for another hour.
Yeah, let's just talk about money.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, oh gosh, another Steam conversation. okay, so yeah, so the game is, I don't know, well, you said you were going to maybe play it this weekend, so did you get a chance to play it? I always assume like other developers like don't have much time to play games, because I don't tend to play very many games.
Yeah, I don't play anything anymore. I played it when it came out for a while, and I really liked it, and then I didn't play it. You know, which sucks, because I actually really liked it. And then I played it a bit more this weekend, but it was the same kind of thing where I was playing it and I was really liking it, and I was like, I gotta go do this thing now.
Yeah, exactly.
And it sucks, because this is the kind of game that I really like, and it's the kind of game I'm usually looking for, and I can't find anywhere.
Right.
And I guess specifically what I mean is a game where there's a world, and you can explore it, but there's still some storytelling, and there's also some options of how you can proceed, and it's not totally linear, and it's rare where a game sort of gets that balance right for my taste, and this was immediately like, oh, okay, neat, like,
yeah.
I can kind of wander around a bit and get lost, but then there's also a purpose to things, and
yeah, for sure. That's kind of like the itch that I always like to be scratched too. Like, I really so anyways, yeah, the game is basically like I always describe it as a cross between Ultima 6 and Zelda, like Link to the Past, which is most people that have played it and have played those two games actually kind of agree. So the Ultima 6 thing is basically, when you talk to like NPCs, they have really like elaborate dialogue trees, and also you can suggest keywords, which usually do nothing, but sometimes if you learn something about somebody and you mention that keyword, then you sort of like prompt something that they would never bring up themselves, which is just, to me, playing Ultima 6 like as a sort of like junior hire, that was truly, truly something amazing about that game, is that you know, if you find out that this character knows this character and they live like on opposite sides of the world, but they have like this romantic past, they'll never bring each other up, right? But if you find that out, you can talk to them about each other, right? And they've got a whole backstory. It's just like a very cool feeling. So it's some of that, and also just kind of like, I guess, Zelda style progression where you find new items that open up new areas. There's not really like numbered dungeons in it. It's something that's different. But there are like dungeons and puzzles and that kind of style of like actiony, puzzly stuff.
And you also have time of day stuff going on.
Yes. Yeah. So there's like a day and night cycle and all that jazz.
So there's a lot of sort of detail in the world, and you can actually go to people's houses and open things in their house and steal things and all that. And I wanted to kind of ask you a bit about that, because the first time I played it, that was the first thing, interestingly enough, that you introduce, is sort of the whole inventory system.
Yes.
And it was an interesting choice for me, because I was thinking, like, if I designed the game, I would have been tempted to simplify or remove most of the inventory system. But as a player, I really liked it. And it kind of surprised me a bit, because I've always liked inventory systems. Yeah. As a developer, I've been kind of going through this, I should, like, you know, everything should be minimalist, get rid of anything that's not absolutely necessary. But then playing this game, I was like, I get all this feeling out of the inventory.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. My take on it is that it's, like, for me, whether a world is kind of believable or not depends not so much on how it looks, but, like, how much you can interact with it. I think that's maybe why people feel, say, Minecraft is so immersive, because, like, the level of interaction is so, so, so huge there. Like, you can, you know, if you can sort of, like, see it, you can, like, manipulate it. And so, for me, the inventory system kind of fills that gap a little bit. Like, in the real text, you can't do anything about walls, right? Walls are fixed. But if you can open somebody's cupboard and sort of, like, steal their clothes and put on their clothes, that's, like, way more satisfying and does a better job of immersing you than just, like, seeing that they have a cupboard there, even if it's, like, a nicely sort of rendered cupboard.
And it's interesting, because if you had a puzzle where it was, like, we need to dress up, like, this person to get past this guard or something like that.
Right.
It's essentially a key door puzzle, except the key is just a different type of item.
Yes, yeah,
exactly. And, like, the inner John Blow that lives in my head and yells at me all the time would tell me not to do that, because that's not really different. But then as a player, I don't care. I would find that entertaining and interesting, and I wouldn't notice that it was a key door thing.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't, like, listened to John Blow very much. So
I don't know if this is really what John Blow thinks. This is the version of John Blow that lives in my
head. I know what you mean, though. Like, when it comes to puzzles, you sort of, it's hard not to do a key door thing in some form or another, and just, like, keys and doors masquerading as different things. But I know exactly what you mean. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, as a developer, you can't force yourself to, like, overthink everything, right? So you gotta, like, be allowed to just kind of mess around with the existing.
And this is something I really wanted to talk to you about, because the other thing I noticed when playing the game was, and I don't mean this in a negative way.
Yeah.
But the idea, like, it felt like you were making it up as you went along. And I actually, that's something that I really liked about the game as well. It almost felt like, sorry, in terms of the way that the story is introduced, but also in terms of the way that the game, like, the way it seems to have been built, in terms of the code and stuff, it felt like you kind of built this system, and then you built the system on top of it. And that was really inspiring to me, actually, because it felt like you had the guts to go with your intuition and let it be this free-flowing creative thing, and you weren't getting bogged down in the, oh, I have to go back and make all this stuff fit my new idea. It was more just, well, let's just keep playing with this thing and keep molding it and see what it becomes.
Yeah, and that's actually, I think that's pretty much the process. Like, I remember when I went and put the inventory system in, right? And it was for a specific puzzle. And you know, I know exactly the moment where I did. I actually always had the sort of keyword system in that was in there from the very start, but the actual inventory I didn't probably originally think I would need or do. So, no, I remember, and I like sat and thought about it for a couple of days. I'm like, that's gonna add so much complexity to the game, right? But I did it in the end, and it was like, yeah, it was a lot of work, obviously, but yeah, it is very much that. It's like all these kind of different systems layered on each other, just kind of how I wanted them to be, and copying a lot, just really copying from stuff that I like. Like the Ultima games also have that thing where you can like interact or at least pick up any object anywhere and just kind of like put it inside boxes if that's mm-hmm. what you want to do, and I find that like oddly satisfying. And also like when you set, like, it's okay in my mind for enemies to respawn because they're like a resource, so you kind of want them to respawn, but if you set an object on the ground and it just disappears when you go off the screen, like that has like really major implications for what an item is in the game. So it's and so for me it was really important to have like a persistent inventory system where if you want you can just like, you know, stow away your things in someone's, you know, dresser and it will stay there. You know, it would be cool if you could like stow like stow other clothing in someone's dresser and then they would like start wearing it. But it's not quite, you know, it's not quite that smart, but yeah, I just kind of, I don't know, I just kind of like those things, like it was very much like made up as I went along, and honestly too, the story really was like made up as I went along. I had a master plan for a story and I started like implementing it and it was not really good. It was just way too slow and way too obscure and not really interesting, so I just kind of chucked it and did something different. I also like built the world before I really knew what was going to happen in it, so I remember sitting down with a big list of like English names and also like sitting and thinking like demographically like what the distribution of people in a town would actually be like. And so like I did, like I actually sat down like with my calculator actually and did like random numbers to pick names off of a list and also like to pick ages and stuff, so and genders, so that I wouldn't have like, you know, like a sort of artificially contrived sort of thing. So I sat down and did all that, and then I actually had enough. So there's like one town in the game and the original setting, so the setting was done like probably pretty much first. Okay, so like the original setting is like six towns and like about 10 times as large than the actual town of Strange, and it was always like kind of a mix of Texas and England. That was always clear, but it wasn't clear like why it was that or how that, you know, even came to be or anything. That sort of came along later and I figured out what it was actually going to be. But yeah, it was originally just going to be like multiple towns and this huge overworld. It's like, yeah, it was more than enough what I did. But
that's kind of funny because the Rand do a similar thing, and I wonder how common that is. I mean, you kind of see kids doing that a lot when they're trying to make their first game. They kind of over-design it. They're like, okay, I need like, you know, 100 villages, and
right.
It needs to be bigger than World of Warcraft or whatever. And
yeah, I think that honestly, like, I think it's fine. Like for me, what I try to do now is like, draw whatever I think, right? So draw just, and I just like to draw on paper. So I always like, I've got other like of my other sort of four projects. You know, one is like a year in, and one is maybe just a few months in, but it's pretty well developed in my mind. So what I try and do now is like just draw it and then just sort of like sit for a day or two and then just cut it in half, really, or even less, you know. And so and then see what that's really like see how big that actually is. So, you know, usually you need, obviously like far, far less than you'll actually design for, right? You'll think, oh, I need all these towns and everything, and really you don't. But I think it's still cool to just like draw them on paper.
Yeah.
Maybe they're never visited, maybe they're never even referenced, but you know that they're there, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a way, so you can see the smaller slice.
Yeah, and it also helps you just explore more potential ideas and then narrow it down later to what actually works. You know, 'cause you kind of have a...
Yeah.
One thing that happens with me, I kind of come up with a bunch of separate things that are supposed to be distinct, and then I realize I can merge them together.
Right.
And then it sort of becomes one thing, but it's got multiple facets to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good strategy, too. It's like, if you realize you have, like... But I think you have to be a bit careful, too, because, like, if you... do you remember that, like, Pixar thing that was, like, all the rage a month ago or so? It was, like, the 10 Pixar rules of storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you will empathize more with the character for trying and for succeeding. And, like, so it's like, okay, you read those and you're like, oh, yeah, well, that is kind of what Pixar movies are like, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I like, honestly, it's a really popular opinion, but I don't really like Pixar. Like, I find that their stories are so contrived. Like, they're so precisely laid out, you know? And it's, like, enjoyable on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's a little bit, like, soulless, if that makes sense. There's no, like, rough edges, or there's no just kind of, like, pointless
dirt.
Yeah,
I think my favorite Pixar movie was Ratatouille for that reason, because it felt like it had a few rough edges.
Okay, I didn't see Ratatouille, so I...
Oh, like, it's kind of different than the other ones.
Is it?
For
okay.
me, it feels a bit more like a... And they actually had a lot of problems while they were making it. I think that kind of shows through in a way that I like.
Oh, yeah.
But, I don't know. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, they're sort of formulaic.
Like, the Pixar movies I'm thinking of when I say I don't like them, I'm thinking of WALL-E. I know everybody loves WALL-E, and there's so much in there that I'd, you know, love too. But WALL-E's,
yeah.
Like, I found WALL-E actually really, like, cynical and almost, like... Anyways, I probably shouldn't, like, rant on Pixar forever, but the point is just that, like, I think it's a trap to get too contrived and too constructed with stories. So I think it's, like, nicer and more natural to, like, have a story that has, like, pointless stuff in it. Right, so it's like if you have like a game and you've got two restaurants in the game, it's sort of obvious to like be like, do I really need to like think how much work there is in like programming a restaurant? And so on the one hand, yeah, like if you want to finish your game, you have to like make lots of decisions to be like, okay, these are just going to become one. We're not going to have this other one. It's not necessary. But you don't want to take it too far, because also like some of that random weirdness is what will make it interesting and give it kind of a soul. And I find like if you read like a little bit older novels, it's like that too. They're a little more arbitrary and random, but they're more like actually like Charles Dickens is like that. Like if you read Dickens, it's like, because especially he wrote a lot of stuff in serials.
Yeah, he was writing it serialized. He didn't know exactly what was
going
to happen.
So he doesn't know like what's going on. And those are considered like really some of the greatest, you know, novels in the English language, but it's like they're episodic. And it's like he just kind of figured out how to pull it together later on, you know? And so I think, I don't know, I think when you're creating stuff, you have to give yourself permission to do that kind of, to work that way, right? To be like, well, I don't really know why this is in here, and maybe there is no purpose, and maybe it's just a waste of time, but it's like, if it's even just entertaining, then maybe that's valuable enough, you know?
Yeah, I think it's like things that you find compelling in some way, and you might not be able to even describe why.
Yeah.
But you have to go with it, because that's all you've got at the beginning. All you have is, like, I find this idea compelling.
Yeah.
And you kind of just have to roll with that long enough and stick with it. And it's surprising to me how much the success or failure of a project seems to be more about sticking with it rather than, you know, knowing for sure that it's perfectly designed or, you know, that kind of thing, or realizing it's not that great and throwing it out. It's like, if you can stick with it and massage it enough, then you can usually succeed reasonably well. And yeah, and that's something I've been having trouble with lately, is just, you know, working on stuff for a long time and hating it, and eventually and then just dropping it, because it's like I can't see how to make it work in the way that would satisfy me, you know. But that's sort of the downside of trying to force things into a certain structure too much, or holding them to some kind of ideal or whatever, you know, rather than just letting them sort of flow out naturally and just going with it.
Yeah. You mean, do you mean, like, you have trouble because you tend to want to try, like, you tend to feel like things aren't quite fitting together properly, so you get frustrated, like, trying to force them that way, or do you mean you just kind of get tired of...
Well, it sort of depends how you're designing things. Like, in the case of, like, Marion, where it was, like, I want everything in that game to have a specific, to tie into certain themes...
Yeah.
Then you can't just be like, oh, this is a cool thing that happens in the gameplay, I'll put that in, because it doesn't fit.
I see.
And then you're kind of like, oh, well, I can go with this, but then I'm changing...
Right.
And it's sort of all these elements that you want to see them come together very sort of specifically or in a certain direction. And I think that's really difficult to do right. Whereas if it was more like, well, this sort of idea of a thing, and, like, let's just try it, and, like, okay, this is the fun part, let's, you know.
Right.
I mean, and so it's really exciting for me to play a game like this where it was, you know, I could sort of see myself working on a game like this and be like, okay, I've got this combat system, and how I can just add this other system, and they're not going to conflict.
Right,
like,
right.
The inventory system is not going to conflict too much with the combat system in Real Texas, because... just by the nature of how they work.
Right.
They do interact, but they're not dependent on each other.
Right.
They're not so closely tied that they're going to break each other if one goes a certain way and one goes another.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, absolutely. There's sort of two
modes.
That's
really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, there's sort of two modes, right? So the inventory stuff is mostly, like, in town, and there's no enemies at all. There's nothing really dangerous going on. And, yeah, the combat, you're sort of, you know, focusing more about moving your guy around and stuff. Yeah, like, honestly, there's a lot of stuff that comes out now, like, manifestos or like, you know, lists of things, and, or just, even just very strong opinions about design or whatever.
Right.
And I just think, like, oh my gosh, like, there's more than one way to, like, make a game, right? And, and I it's like, you gotta just take what you want from stuff that you read, I think, but you have to at the same time be like, eh, whatever, like, so what? Like I remember reading this really cool one manifesto that was posted, like, on Wire, I guess about a year ago. It was, like, the Super Brothers one, and they're, like, talking about how the native language of games is, like, this highly stripped down, condensed thing, and that's it's interesting, because, like, the way I responded to that is, I'm like, oh, like, this game is a failure, right? Like, the Real Texas is, like, so verbose and stuff. And so, but at the same time, it's like, it was useful, like, to just think that, okay, that's how someone else, like, works this thing. Like, that's how somebody else works. That's how somebody else sees it. And so, actually, in the end, you know, I did take something away from that, but also realized that, you know, reading a novel is an enjoyable activity, and you know, if you sort of have, like, novel like sort of development in a game, then that's, like, why not, right? If that's what you want to do, it's still enjoyable, or it's, you know, still, it has a point, it's a valid sort of way of working. So I don't know, I just think that people should, like, there's so many different ways to work, and so I mean, just the way, like, I don't like the way Pixar sort of makes movies. It seems too structured to me. You know what, though? Like, they also know what they're doing, and their movies are really satisfying in a lot of ways, you know? Like, I certainly cried at the end of Up, right? Mm-hmm. But that's, like, maybe the most contrived Pixar movie.
Yeah, I couldn't stand Up.
Right.
I was really let down by Up.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I like the first 5 minutes, and then... it just seemed like they had a bunch of random things happen. Oddly enough, like, I kind of felt like it, not even talking about structure, just it didn't feel like it. Same with Wall-E. Wall-E had like a, I love the intro, and I kind of wish the movie ended after the first 20 minutes. You know, that would be a great little movie where he flies off from the junk planet and you don't know where he's going to go, and that's
right,
it.
Right.
Then they have this whole other thing with this preachy message about stuff.
So preachy,
and,
yeah.
And then stupid adventures with robots flying around really fast that just don't have anything to do with, you know, it's just action sequences.
Right.
And it's really jarring because they did a lot of, the whole first part's like a little silent film.
Right, yeah.
Which is amazing. And then they just shit all over it. And the rest of it turned into a generic kids animated movie, you know? It's, and that's kind of the thing, like, it's the thing that indie games can kind of do and on other mediums, you know? But, like, you can have a creator who's just like, I'm interested in this thing. I'm going to go pursue this thing. I don't care that it's not going to technically impact as many people and whatever. I'm just going to do this because I think it's interesting, right? Yeah. And then you do get these things that are really different and compelling at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, I mean, the thing is, when you're small developers, like, you don't have to appeal to everybody. So why? Yeah. Why? I mean, okay, this is like another manifesto, but you don't have to appeal to everybody to get by, right? Or to even do pretty well. So why not just do what you want and just trust that there's enough people out there that sort of are going to find that interesting? You know, I was watching actually, like, the one person who I guess was like a real, real celebrity YouTuber, which I don't really know like who the celebrity YouTubers are, but I just know like this guy, like he had this YouTube channel, it was, like, gets like 35,000 views in like a day. Right, on just whatever game he plays, and super nice guy, and like I watched his Let's Plays and stuff, but you know what, like he played the Real Texas, and it was like really super exciting. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this guy's like got this huge audience, but you know, watching him play, it's like I realize like it's just not like the game for him, right? Like I watched other YouTubers play it, and they seem to like kind of get it more or whatever, but so it's kind of like, you know, that doesn't really disappoint me. Like, he decided to drop it, like, he was going to play the whole thing, and I was like, whoa. But then he decided to drop it, and I was like, that's... Well, no, yeah, and it was, like, kind of disappointing, because I was, like, really, really wanting... Especially, like, it starts off very, very random, right? The whole thing starts off, and it totally feels, like, random. But actually, it was, like, a terrible process. But I did pull it all together, right? I mean, I really did. So by the end, you're like, oh, yeah. Like, it actually fits. Okay, well, sweet. No. I don't know that you'll be like that.
I don't know.
In my mind, it all fits, right? So, yeah. So I was like, oh, gosh, it'll be so cool if it just gets, like, to this point, right? But on the other hand, it's like, well, it's really okay. Like, it's not... It's definitely not, like, for everybody, right? It's just not... And so I think as a small developer, you can, like, you can do that. You don't have to appeal to a huge audience. So I think that's a nice thing about doing it, right? Like, and it's interesting. Like, Christine Love is, like, the prime example, right? Because she does, like... Mm-hmm. I think she does really, really well. And it's what? It's, like, visual novels, right? It's mm-hmm. not... And it's, like... Like, I'm playing Analog: A Hate Story right now, and it's, like, so not mainstream, right?
Yeah.
But, she sort of, like, tweeted her sales figures, like, indirectly, and she's, like, doing very, very well, you know? So...
Well, there's nobody else is really doing that kind of thing at all. Like, there are people making visual novels, but not, like, that kind of visual novel.
Right.
Not like, well, there's a lot of goofy visual novels, but there aren't a lot of ones that are trying to actually do something with it. You know?
That's I think that's true. And also, crucially, she's like she's just excellent. Like, it's like I sort of realized this like maybe a month ago or so. I was trying to kind of describe like the Real Texas to somebody, and they're like, "Oh, I don't like games where you just wander around and do stuff." And I'm like, "Well." But it really kind of like depends on the stuff, right? In other words, like there's games that are like obviously better or obviously different. There's sort of like a new mechanic, or there's a bigger budget, like Skyrim, right? Skyrim is like obviously something unique, just the scope of it and everything. And so you can point to it and say, okay, but it's like the biggest, it's like the best of a game that is like this, right? And other games have sort of a unique mechanic. You can say, well, there's no other game that's quite like World of Goo or whatever, right? So there's that. But then there's like, well, okay, it's a visual novel, but it's like just, and so you read stuff and click dialogue, right? But it's just extremely good, right?
Yeah.
That's the key. It's like, okay, you understand how like a novel sits on the shelf and it's like, oh, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, it's like something new, right? It's something new in a way, maybe. But a novel that sits beside it, or maybe in a different section of the bookstore, it's just a really good novel. Like, you can't point to it and say, oh, but there's been novels about,
right,
you know, the Civil War or whatever before. Yeah. There's lots of novels about the Civil War. Right, but this one is better. I don't know which would be better, because, like, that doesn't interest me as a topic. I kind of, like, imagine there are, like, really good novels about the Civil War and really bad ones, too. And so I think it's, you know, sometimes you can look at a game and say it's obviously different, and other times it's like, no, it is just like a, you know, like an RPG with like stats and battles and turn-based combat. It's just better, you know, it's just like actually really clever and good. And I think like Christine Love, it's like you read her writing and it's like, oh my gosh, it's just like, you can't really say it's better because like it has this feature. You just have to be, it's better because it, maybe you could say it's better because it legitimately like subverts your expectations and it's truly, truly, truly interesting to play. But I don't know, that's just my way of like
and I agree with you, which is the weird thing, because I don't give myself that sort of liberty when I'm working. I don't let myself be like, well, it's just what I want to do and I think it's going to be cool.
Right.
So let's go there and then hopefully it'll be good. It's like, you know, five people are going to call me out on my gameplay mechanics, so I quit.
You just copied Super Meat Boy. Right. yeah. I think, but at the same time, it's like, if what you want to do is something, you know, completely different or whatever, then that's obviously awesome to you. I mean, it's,
well, even if what you want to do is, yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's just figuring out what you want to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's new or not. Like, you know, like, I don't feel like, I don't feel compelled to especially discourage people who are doing things that aren't super unique.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why they're making games. They can tell me, but they probably don't know why. They probably don't know what they're going for yet. They have to sort of discover that. And that's the real thing about being creative, I think, is just finding the thing that keeps you going.
And yeah.
It's so easy to have that stomped on, I think.
Like, yeah.
Things can really mess with that. I don't know where I'm going with this, but...
No, I know what you mean. Like, somebody posts their game on, like, a forum or something, and...
Mm-hmm.
People just like rip it apart and say, oh, you need to do this instead or whatever, and it's really kind of missing the point, right? Like, it's kind of like any, it is kind of true that anybody can be a critic, right? And so yeah, I actually think that one of the better ways to get some energy is to just like go into the forums, whatever forums they are, and just like play some random games that, you know, the kids are posting, and just write like one or two lines about what you liked, and it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like refreshing. And then you think back, like, you think, man, what is it like? I'm on a forum, Super Friendship Club, which is great. And you know, there's a thing that happens with like every forum, which is every person that's making a game gets a list of all the forums together, and they go and they post about their game on every forum, and there's cut and paste and all that, right? And so you see that and you're like, oh, like spam, right? Oh, I just can't can't deal with this spam. But the thing is, yeah, but if you reply to it, then they will reply. So what that means is, like, okay, so they spammed all these forums in a sense, but on the other sense, they're checking them, like, every day to see if somebody posted even one thing about their game, right? And so, you know, it's pretty cool when that happens, right? When you're just like, hey, you know, like, what's your blah, blah, blah? Like, how many NPCs are you going to have? Or you just post, like, anything. And then they're like, oh, I'm going to blah, 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 blah. You know, you're like, oh, that sounds cool, right? It's like, eh, that's as far as it has to go, really. Because, I mean, it's up to them to sort of figure out all the details. And, I mean, sometimes people want criticism and they ask for it, and you got to be like, okay, like, I'll sit down and think about, well, what if you did this? Or maybe it should be like this. And that's one thing. But then it's also, you can really shut people down, right? If you get too critical on their stuff.
Yeah, and I've done that by accident a few times. You know, it's interesting, but it is really, I was hanging around Vancouver with Chevy and Matt, and Chevy was telling me about his new plan for Hollow's Deep.
Oh yeah.
And I basically ripped it apart. I wasn't trying to be a dick. It was just, hey man, from my experience, I tried to do something like that, it didn't work, here's why it didn't work, here's some ideas maybe that you could try. And he was, like, bummed out for, like, an entire day.
Oh, no.
And then he went and worked on something else.
Right.
And I felt really weird, like, and he was fine.
Right.
But
right.
It was still, like, this weird thing where I totally recognized what I did, because I've had people do that to me, too. And all the things that go through that of, like, you know, if somebody tells you something like that, and you sort of know that they're right, but you're also really frustrated because you really wanted this thing to work, and now you can't see the way to make it work, and it's just that whole thing, you know.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's ultimately always hard to take, like, any criticism, but at the same time, it's, like, ultimately necessary. So, like, from the perspective of a person, like, receiving criticism, I think that's something I have learned, and maybe that's why like I try not to. But I've done the exact same thing. In fact, I was, like, talking to my partner here about, you know, this idea I had for a YouTube series, which would be ripping apart people's trailers, and, you know, luckily she pointed out what a tremendously asshole thing that would be to do, and also the fact that, like, what do I know about making trailers, really, which is next to nothing, right? So I mean, I guess that's, like, an extreme example of just being callous, but I don't know, it's a murky space, right? Criticism and I don't know, like, maybe you said that to Chevy and like, I know Chevy, I've met Chevy like a couple times too and stuff. Maybe you said that to Chevy and maybe Chevy was bummed out for a couple days, but maybe, like, you know, down the road, that all maybe, like, kind of percolates or whatever, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ferments,
for sure.
Or it just sits there and grows, and maybe that helps them figure something out. I mean, it's like, you just, I don't know, it's like a chaotic kind of formula, right? Like, you say one thing to somebody, and that makes them make, like, a change that results in something radically different, but at the same time, what can you do, right? You have to.
Well, you don't know exactly what your actions are going to lead to, so.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that always kind of scares me about going into that, because I know, like, every word is going to be taken a certain way, and might not be the way I intended, you know, and very aware, because that's how I've experienced it from the other side, where somebody says one thing, and it's like, oh, they think this, you know, and reading into it and stuff, and going over it again and again, so.
Yeah.
It can be tricky.
And I mean, like, so many things, like, probably just doesn't really have a good answer. I think when you're the person, like, receiving the criticism, maybe that's where you have some control, actually, because I remember, like, the first sort of game I ever did is, like, Legacy Forest. It's, like, kind of an RPG. And I worked so hard on that game, right? That was sort of the first big game I ever made, and I remember releasing it. It's like people like just trashing it on IRC, right? Like more or less to my face, right? Like they knew it was my game, right. But like to the point of saying like it was the ugliest game they had ever seen in their life, right? Now, I know, like I remember that it stuck with me all those years. And so I don't really know where I'm going with this, other than yeah, there's one of my many scars, I guess. I wonder though, like, mm-hmm. I wonder like. From that comment, whether I'd like formulated the idea that I couldn't do graphics or I couldn't do art, because I only think I only changed that opinion about myself probably like 4 years ago. I just decided that rather than always be saying, oh, I can't do art, rather what I should say is like, I would like to improve at art, you know, and then working to improve. And that's been really positive. But I wonder, like, at what point I decided I couldn't do art in the first place. Maybe it was that one comment, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that way too about some things, like, you know, things people said to me when I was a kid. I remember one of them was talking to my friends about wanting to make games and sell them. And they're like, well, I guess you could go work for a studio. And I was like, well, I don't really want to, you know.
Right.
This is when I was in junior high. And they're like, well, you can't do it any other way.
Right.
I said, well, here's this guy, Jeff Vogel, he Spiderweb Software, he sells this game.
Right.
And they're like, well, what has he made? And I'm like, well, here's this game. They're like, I wouldn't buy that. You know, and that's what I remember. I just remember someone saying, I wouldn't buy that. And essentially, I took that to mean they wouldn't buy anything that I'd make.
Right.
And they haven't to this day. That group of friends, like, still, like, they don't have any excuses anymore. They're always like, oh, when you port it to this platform, we'll buy it. And it's right. Like, okay, it's not, oh, we'll get around to it sometime, you know. it's weird, those little things, you know, and really they don't matter at all, but for some reason they stick with you.
It's true, yeah. You can't, I mean, I don't know, it's hindsight's always 20/20, right? Like, you can always look back and say, oh, if I had only not listened to that person. But, whatever.
Well, I think they kind of drive you a bit, too, sometimes.
Yeah, I can, for sure. I think maybe that's, like, partly so-called maturity or whatever, too, is, like, just being, like, I don't know, maybe a person will never reach, like, the stage where they're like, oh, I know what I'm doing. But maybe, like, you can reach a stage where you're like, I don't care what you think.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like going back in a way. Like, for me, I remember being a kid and just writing, like, a novel.
Right.
Just because I wanted to and I thought it was awesome, you know. And then starting to work on an RPG, and then I kept restarting it every few months, but it was still like, just, I'm excited to make an RPG, I want to make it, okay, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And whereas today, if I've thought about, oh, I like RPGs, what kind of RPG should I make? And I just get stuck at that stage of like, well, this is not different enough or not, you know, elegant enough, so I need to, when really it would be way more exciting and interesting and probably productive and useful to jump in and just make something. Just be like, okay, whatever, start going with what feels good.
Right.
Put something down on the page. You know, it's the same thing with writing. It's just like, write something, and then you can look at it and recognize the parts you don't like, and recognize the parts you do like, and start tweaking it. But if you have a blank page, you got nothing, you know?
I think, like, I mean, for me, like, one of the things is, I really like the world-building aspect of it, and mm-hmm. so what's cool about that, and the way that I work is just, I just make the graphics or whatever, just like make the, you know, if it's tiles, I just kind of like start making maps. And just, because like, for me, that's kind of like what I find the most enjoyable or the most evocative, like even about playing games, right? Is just like, what's this world that I'm in. And I actually, like, personally, I don't enjoy games that are, I don't usually enjoy games that are primarily based around mechanics. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's just my thing, but there's other people who totally do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, in no way am I suggesting, like, that, you know what I mean? But, for me personally, it's like, yeah, I like a game that has sort of a world to it, and, so for me, like, when I start to make a game, it's just kind of sit down and just, like, make a map, right, and see what it looks like. And also, now that I've worked hard to try and, like, develop some kind of artistic skill, usually what I do is start with just colors. So just kind of like, whoa, what color would this place be? And like, what would it be like if it's like everything was kind of lit with green or whatever? Like, that would be kind of cool. it's like, I don't know. I still kind of start that way and then figure out how the story is going to fold in after. But
yeah, and I think what's interesting about, like, oddly enough, that's kind of what we did with Aquaria. But for Marion, I found it hard to work that way because of the type of gameplay. And yeah. I guess one thing I could have done is force the gameplay to go a different way. Like, because it's kind of like, okay, is the level design going to dictate the gameplay, or is the mechanics going to dictate the level design, you know?
Right.
It depends on the style of gameplay that you're going for. Like, in Real Texas, you could kind of see it. Okay, you could kind of make the maps bigger and it would still work.
Yeah.
Because you can still move around the same way and shoot the same way.
Yeah.
But for something that might be more like a platformer or something with other types, it might be more specific. Like, okay, you need to jump this high, so you can't, right. This thing can't just be arbitrarily high.
Right, yeah, and that's absolutely right, too. It's like certain types of mechanics you can't necessarily... they can't necessarily just build whatever. But, you know, there's, like, I do think, though, there's, like, a way of looking at it, which is, like, what would be here, right? Like, so,
mm-hmm.
One game that I'm working on, which is, like, the one that I don't talk about at all, just because I don't want to, like, kind of, like, take any suggestions on it, if that makes sense, like, in, even indirectly. So I know, I, like, just basically haven't told, like, anybody at all pretty much about it. But I'll tell you, like, one thing that I'm doing with it is basically, like, every sort of building has to be functional from a plumbing sense. Okay. So there needs to be... I realized afterwards that, like, I really could have done HVAC as well, like heating, ventilation, air conditioning, but no, just as a constraint. Every building has to have, like, a toilet in it, if that building would have to have a toilet in it in real life. And so, it's, like, kind of this really weird constraint. But again, because, like, particularly, like, toilets are, like, this rare sort of, you know, we can, like, think back to famous, like, video game toilets, right? There's the one in Deus Ex. There's the one, and I guess there's some spoilers. What's that?
Metal Gear Solid, sort of.
Which game?
Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, Metal Gear. You know what? I haven't played Metal Gear Solid. Oh, okay. But yeah, okay. I'm thinking of the one in, like that final tower in Final Fantasy 3 or Final Fantasy 6. Kefka's kind of, like, tower has that one, like, toilet with the Atma weapon in it. But, like, they're sort of, like, it's always, like, more of a joke or whatever. So it's, like, what would it be like, if a game had, like, realistic plumbing in the sense of, like, having to have toilets and sinks and kitchens, even though it's, like, tedious and pointless from a gameplay perspective. So anyways, I guess what I was trying to say is, like, sometimes I think you can just, like, put stuff in and then, like, figure out maybe, like, what mechanics would therefore exist, right? So, like, which, again, like, it's not everybody's gonna work that way, but I guess, like,
yeah, that's the
way that I typically approach it is, I'm like, yeah, like,
yeah.
If there is, like, a cliff here, like, how do you circumvent, or how do you, like, navigate that cliff? Do you have, like, tools to climb it, or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but it's obviously not gonna... I'm helped along by the fact that I'm pretty loose with that kind of stuff, like, or try to be. Whereas, like, other types of games are much tighter, like Super Meat Boy is, like, You know,
right,
obviously, you can't just, like, arbitrarily change the jumping and have it still work, right? So...
Yeah, and it's an interesting trade-off, because games like Meat Boy are sort of not as interesting from a exploring this area perspective. It's more, okay, this is going to be a really sweet jump over these saws, you know? Like, these saws are here because it's a cool jump.
Yeah.
There's no other logic to it or background or story meaning to it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's totally different. It's like a totally different kind of animal, right?
Yeah.
And there's almost no point even comparing these different types of games. Like, why do we... That's another... There is a question. Right. Like, why do we always, like, have to, like, compare...
Stuff.
Or, like, try and, like, impose one set of, like,
mm-hmm.
rules on another type of game?
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, I mean, there's different ways to approach things. So you can kind of approach something like, well, I'm just going to try and figure out what this is trying to be.
Right.
And then enjoy it from that perspective or evaluate it from that perspective. And then there's a, I don't care what this is trying to be. I wanted it to be this and it's not, you know?
Do you mean like kind of like you sort of implement something and you look at it and try and figure out like...
A bit more
what has it, what is... Oh, okay.
Like more when you're playing something and you're like, oh, it's not, you know, they're not exploring this thing and I kind of was thinking that they would and...
Oh, I'm
upset versus like, oh, I see that they're going for this. That's not something that I like, but I'm going to go along with it to see.
Right.
Like, understanding it in context of, I guess, what the type of thing is, you know. Just another point, I've been really interested in the intersection point between a Meat Boy level that's designed for gameplay and a level that's, say, designed for story or world.
Right.
Like, what is the perfect... middle point that does both? I don't know if that's even like possible.
I think
one always kind of wins out over the other. Like, it's like, okay, this game tilts more this way and this game tilts more that way, and it's weird because like there's a lot of games I really like, but they still have these awkward moments of just like, why did they put that like there's like a little fence and like you can't jump over it. Like, why didn't they just make it a wall or a tall fence? Like, it just would have been an easy... Things like that, like, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what's... I was going to say something, like, witty. Like, I was going to be like, what's the interaction of, like... Or what's the perfect intersection of, you know... like a serious movie about the Holocaust and like a funny action movie. And then I was like thinking, like, clearly those could never be merged. But then it's like, I haven't seen it, but pretty much isn't that like Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah. Exactly.
So in a way it's like, yeah, well, I don't know. I just don't know. But maybe it does exist.
I can't. Yeah, I'm sort of thinking of like where you can create a world, but then the mechanics are... could be satisfying on their own, but now they're slightly more satisfying because they're paired perfectly in this world where they make sense. They're not just arbitrarily, you know, wedged into the world. Like, a lot of mainstream games that I played, it's like, well, we have this gameplay and this story, fuck it. We'll just put them in a game together, because why not? And it's like, it just sucks. Like, it doesn't draw you in, because it's like, okay, I know that I'm watching a cutscene and the rules are different for the cutscene. The character can jump around and do flips and things that you can't do in the actual game. You know, it's really obvious stuff. I don't know.
You know what? Yeah, and I've heard you talk about this before, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So I know. No, and I actually think the same thing. There's like a kind of a unity that's like sought, right? Between the mechanics or the rules of the game and the world, right, of the game. And there's often this kind of jarring sort of disunity, like you're saying, like a little fence, right? Like, Zelda Link to the Past is full of those, right? These little, like, fences that, even if they were 6 feet high, you just freaking climb over them. It's a fence, right? So, I don't know.
Well,
I think about that a lot, actually. I think about that exact same problem a lot. You know, what... Or maybe another question is like, a related question is like, why do almost all games have an element of combat in them? Why?
Combat's just easy. It's like an immediate physical interaction that works.
Yeah.
And it's, I haven't, you know, I've tried to think about, okay, I want this game to have, you know, less combat. So, okay, well, what are you doing? And one option is like, you're doing combat, but we're going to dress it up so it doesn't feel like combat. Right. Like, oh, it's perfect example of that is like Noah's Ark 3D.
Oh, I haven't played that.
It's like a Super NES Wolfenstein clone, but they just changed the sprite, so you're feeding the animals on the ark. But you're feeding them by throwing food at them, right? And then they go to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Right.
So. but the real text is the game that I think gets a lot of those things right. And I think what was surprising about that for me was how well that worked with the art style, and it makes perfect sense, like, when you think about it, but it's. Kind of like before you mentioned Skyrim as being this sort of like, oh, it's the biggest, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I was kind of thinking, I'm not sure, because with a game like Skyrim, they are limited by the art style. They're basically like, you know, sure, we need to make 100 sets of armor, but they're all going to look very similar, and they can't really just sort of throw something in, like,
right,
without mobilizing a team of a bunch of people. But in your case, I saw another interview that you did about the Real Texas talking about the art style and just how economical it is for you to implement something new. Like, okay, I want whatever, you know, a bird, right, in this scene. Okay, let's make this bird. It's not going to take you, like, an entire, right, day to make a bird.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, that's the reason. I guess that's the constraint that I started with, right? Is everything would be like a rectangular prism. Wouldn't, mm-hmm, allow myself any other geometry. And literally, there isn't an entire game. There's only, wow, rectangular prisms. Prisms. There's a few sort of billboard type, you know, shapes going on, but mm-hmm, no. And actually, something else which kind of you might find interesting is like every object in the game is actually coded. So there are no 3D models that are made in a modeling program at all. Not even one.
Huh.
Like every last, so the most laborious are the guns, right? So there's a program that like does the gun, and it's probably like 700 lines or something really ugly. And it's you know, like, because, and the reason why is just that, you know, that's a good example of an edge case, right? If I had have been able to do a 3D model for the guns, I just would have. It would have been a lot easier. In fact, the way I actually made them is I took pictures of the guns themselves, and then I, like, measured them in, like, GIMP as to what the dimensions were in pixels, and then I, like, coded that in and then scaled it back. So that's the most, like, perverse, edge case, difficult example. But, you know, most of the coding for objects is actually pretty minimal and pretty efficient way of doing it. Like a table, okay, so I write the routine for a table. But now when I want a table, I only have to specify, like, what are, like, the dimensions, yeah, the thickness, and the materials involved. And, you know, like, if I wanted to be, and does it have a tablecloth, and what's the tablecloth material? And how far down does it hang? Like, just a few little parameters, and then it's like, oh, I've got another table. And so that is, like, actually was really good to have all the objects be procedural, and only in a few cases was it truly hell. And basically the guns were. Normally for the guns, right, I would have just used, like, a simple billboard sprite, but because it's, like, always there, it just felt really, like, I tried that, right, but it felt just really insubstantial and bad. So yeah.
Wow. See, it's interesting because when I first was playing it, I was like, this is probably a Unity game.
Really?
I was thinking about how I could build it in Unity, so I was like, okay, everything's a cube, and put the world together like this. I wonder, I guess you have, like, prefab for each, you know, world. I was trying to, like, reverse engineer how you built it in Unity, right, and I talked to you about it, and you're like, no, C++ or something. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not mostly C++. It's mostly in Lua.
Oh, okay.
So it's there's a core engine in C++. It's fairly minimal. I couldn't tell you how many lines, but it's fairly minimal, and going forward I've reused it all for future stuff and stripped it down even further. So the core of the game is in Lua. So it's kind of like, and I've learned how to do like how to draw those lines, right? That's one thing I really learned technically is like how do you, if you're gonna do that, which by no means do I recommend necessarily, but for people like I could never really see myself recommending to somebody, oh yeah, just like program your own game engine in C++ and OpenGL. Why don't you do it that way? That's the path to success, right? But at the same time, it's like
It works.
it's yeah, and the weird thing is like my strength is as a programmer. So
Yeah, you're coming from that angle.
I might as well. Like, in a sense, especially now that I've written all this code, would I abandon it and work in Unity? Like, maybe one day. I just can tell you, I sure wouldn't want to write or spend a lot of time writing like shaders and stuff, you know, or like a proper, really, really proper rendering sort of architecture with like self-shadowing and all that. Like, if you follow the WoolFire thing with overgrowth, it's really quite cool technically, but I just like there's no way. That's just not what I want to do. So it's like, I have this engine now, I really like it. I'm comfortable with it, you know. I like coding it in Lua. I like the way that it works and I like my workflow. So I'll just keep using it and stuff, but I don't know like if I were starting from ground from you know, zero. If I were starting from zero, I can't see myself doing that. Or maybe another way I should put it is I can see myself doing it, but it would be a mistake.
I don't know,
Right?
because like now that you are at this point, it kind of, I found that different coding styles totally change the way I design games, like, which creeps me out a bit, but it's not like I have this design in mind and I'm just implementing it. I'm like bouncing off the engine I'm using a bit, and it influences how I approach stuff.
Right.
So like in the case of Marin, where I had one version or like three different versions in Unity and then a couple versions in like Monocle
Right.
C++, they're very different like
Right.
approaches to the same sort of game, but they totally changed the way that it felt and everything. So
Yeah, and I can see that.
I think that's kind of interesting. Like it, I know some people approach it more like, okay, I know exactly what I want and I'm just going to use the code as a tool to implement this thing, but yeah, it's, I think for some people it's different. And you get the sense with like the way you built the art is very much like, okay, I'm going to use my skills as a programmer to build the art.
Right.
And that's really cool because it gives us a, like a totally different look than you
Yeah.
would get otherwise, you know.
I think that's fair too. Like, I mean, for me, it's really easy because I'm already programming every single object. It's like really easy to put small variations, right? It's like every tree in the game is different. And I'm really, for some reason, sensitive to that. Like when I play games, it's like I'm constantly like scanning for patterns, right? And so that is maybe a sort of neurosis or whatever. It's like that I always have to like design around is like whatever I'm doing, it's like I will not allow myself very many like obviously repeated patterns, you know. And if you look like in the real text, if you look like at almost anything, really almost anything, there's a repeated pattern, but never exactly. So like the bricks on any of the buildings, and it's actually I've improved that now with like some of like my new sort of projects to where it's even, you know, better sort of randomization or whatever. But pretty much I mean, I'm not gonna say there's no repeated pattern, but it's pretty long period and it sort of just like scrambles stuff. I mean, it's super simple the way that it does it, right? All it does is like for the blocks, so like you have like say a block and it's one unit. I mean, for me, Z is always like up against gravity. That's the way that I always think of things. So Z is against gravity, and then X and Y are sort of the directions you move in. So the blocks are all like one by one, right, in X and Y, and then 0.5, half height in the Z axis. And then every building, right, is made up of those blocks. But instead of being a like doing some kind of optimization to, you know, turn a great big flat face into a single polygon, it doesn't like do that at all. Instead, what it does is it just like actually renders them all as individual blocks. It cuts out the faces that are like smushed together, if that makes sense, right? So it's not rendering faces it doesn't need to, but everything's actually really quite tessellated. And then all that I do, right, is just like shift the texture coordinates kind of like randomly for each block. And there's a few different rules. There's a few different rules as to what effect you want to make. Like for instance, if there's like a horizontal floorboards, okay, then that doesn't quite work because they should be like long, right, in say the y-axis or x-axis. You should be able to see like boards that are long. They should line up there. So then what you do in that case is you like kind of like randomize one texture coordinate, which is sort of say on along the x-axis, but then the y-axis you lock to a position for each row. So what that means is that whatever your underlying texture is, it will line up like the boards, right? So it's super hard to describe, but it creates like, if you look carefully, you can see like, say, even in the ballroom or whatever, there's some floor. You can look at the floorboards and you can see like, and the way I did it wasn't quite as good as I'm doing it now, but basically you can see that the floorboards, they don't they line up in one axis, but then they're like randomized as to where that is. So I guess maybe like, if you imagine it this way. Imagine like a single floorboard. Imagine you've drawn like a single board and it's like 6 units long or something. And then you take like a slice of that like somewhere along the length of it. But as to where the edges of that board line up, you keep that consistent across each block so that you can always see that those edges of that board line up. But whether you see like the knots in it or whatever, or whether the sort of board ends and another board starts, that's what's randomized.
Anyway, all a part of that, I think. But I don't know if I got the whole thing.
Honestly, it's like super simple. Yeah. Really, it's super simple. It's just a question
you're
of,
basically playing around with texture coordinates to make it all. So things aren't completely
exactly
lined up.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's a better way of just putting it. It's just like mess around texture coordinates so that. But it's a whole. There's like a whole thing to it too. Because like now when I make a texture, like if it wasn't pixelated, okay, somewhat, if it wasn't that kind of rough edge, it would be much more jarring.
Yeah.
Because you would only have those rough edges where the blocks sort of meet each other. And so it plays in the fact that there's no like aliasing on the colors or anything. It all plays in, right? Because like, it masks that. If you look, I mean, I don't know how obvious it is to everybody, but if you like look at a wall, if you just look for a second or two, you can see that there's always like a jarring transition between the blocks. But the net effect, hopefully, at least for myself when I look at it, the net effect is that it's just like a brick wall, you know, and there's enough other jarring transitions that the ones that line up with the mesh tessellation don't overpower it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like the whole, it's the art style working together and all the different elements.
Yeah.
It's not like, and when you're trying to hit a certain level of realism, you run into problems because you're like, okay, this thing hits the level of realism, but then this is not quite as real and it looks horrible.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
I find games like Skyrim, to me, look horrible in that way because especially like Oblivion or whatever, where they had like, okay, the trees look pretty in the sky and then there's this horrible face on the character and it's that kind of thing, right? And
yeah,
I much prefer when it's consistent and then, yeah, and there's all these benefits like you're talking about that you can kind of, I guess one way to say it is get away with, but it's also like you can explore all these other avenues that you wouldn't be able to with, you know, a higher level of realism or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, if when you have realism, it certainly locks you in, right? Like, you can paint yourself into a corner, like, really, really quickly. The other thing that I like to do now is, like, try and work sketching. Like, try and like do the video game equivalent of sketching. So like for instance in the areas that I'm making now, say in a game, I'll just like first draft, let's just be like a flat color and just see what that's like, and then like one or two lines where, like, if it's a wooden floorboard, just try like one or two lines, and then just see what that's like, and then of course the only point in sketching is if you can like crumple it up and throw it away, right? So sometimes like, oh, I had this idea and I wanted these to be like purple and the wall's kind of orange, but it's just not working. So just throw it away. Just change the colors, make it something different. So that's kind of like, it's kind of what I've been doing now. It's just working in this kind of sketchy way. I've got a couple of projects that are sort of, I'm using that technique with and having some success. I'm like happy with how they're looking once they're finally more solid, you know, like more cool. Final. But
it seems to be the sort of that same idea of like you're talking about with all these variations you were adding into Real Texas, and you're still tweaking them a bit, right?
Yeah.
You're still tweaking the techniques at least, and
right.
So like, same thing of like, I guess I'm curious, like with Real Texas, like what did you start with and what direction were you hitting, and did that end up being the same direction just in terms of the art, like?
No, like it definitely evolved. Like when I started, it was essentially height maps plus blocks, and you know, there actually was a randomization element present from the very start for just that reason. Just the fact that I have like a neurosis about it, I think, and I hate repeating, you know, anything really, perfectly repeating. But in terms of like my own ability to actually create something that looks all right, that changed vastly over the course of the project. So I definitely redid all the graphics in the game at least once.
Yeah.
In fact, just today, I'm like, so I'm trying to put out this like new version that fixes some stuff and whatever. Just today, I'm like, I can't look at this stupid gate any longer. I have to redraw it. Like, why am I doing that? It makes no sense, right? It's like, no one's ever commented on it. No one's ever said anything. But I just feel like that gate looks bad. So redrew it today. And it's like, every time I see it, I just cringe. So I finally just like redrew it. I don't know why. I just have to. So yeah, so no, I mean, I didn't, when I started off, I had very little art. Like, when I started off, I had the attitude about myself that I wasn't an artist. And that, you know, somehow the game would just have to, like, survive on gameplay or whatever. And then partway through, I was like, why did I define that about myself to start mm-hmm. with? Why did I be like, I am not an artist, right? Like, what a stupid thing to say. And also, yeah, fantastic if I could work with somebody and have that good working relationship. But that's very hard when you have no money.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, maybe it doesn't... You once mentioned to me that sometimes even having... You know, you mentioned...
Having money makes it worse.
Right. I didn't want to, like, spill the beans on that, I guess. But yeah, I remember you saying that and thinking, what? But I thought if you just had, like, money to pay people, it's like magic, right? So yeah, it's like, well, if I really want to just kind of realize these ideas, and even if I'm not the final artist, like,
mm-hmm.
for the kind of games that I want to make, like, I probably should cultivate some artistic ability, I guess is what it came down to. And so then I did, and I started that, and I started thinking that way. And it's funny how it's like, you just change your attitude about something,
mm-hmm.
and then you can start to learn, right? It's like your brain goes, oh,
well, oh yeah.
Then let's really think about color. What color should it be? It's a brick wall. Like, should it be?
Well,
is there more than one type of red?
It's weird because like when you work with an artist, and if it's your project, right?
Right.
You have to look at art that comes in and be like, I like this or I don't like this, and then you have to actually know what you want anyway. And it's essentially the same process. Like,
right.
You're not, you know, I mean, it's not the same process, and they, like, I wouldn't have the skills to actually draw things in a really cool way.
Right.
But there would be an advantage for me to develop the skills of, like, okay, I know what I want the color to look like, I know I can mock it up and get it working, and then I just need someone to come in and make it look more detailed or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can kind of do, you kind of do the sketch, right? And that, that you can't define yourself as having no artistic ability and still expect to do a useful sketch.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too harsh, but that's kind of like how I look at, how I looked at it with myself.
I think that happens with a lot of people in a lot of different ways. You know, I've done that. I've seen other people do it. Gotten frustrated with other people for doing it. You know, just the kind of thing of like, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. Right. It's like, well, why not? Why not try it? You know, and I don't know how to do it. Well, it's because you've never done it. Like, it's interesting, like, because, and you're usually talking about people who have skills in other areas, and somehow they develop those skills.
Right.
You know, and, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I tried doing some prototypes the last few months, or I actually tried doing my own art.
Right.
There was, like, a game with, like, a moon character, and there was a game with, like, some fractally things, and it was, like, really fun, and I actually got a lot of compliments about some stuff. It was just, like, a bunch of spheres stuck together with a nice palette, right?
Cool, awesome.
So that's interesting, you know, but traditionally I've always wanted to make games that, like, look, have a certain level of detail. They're stylized, but it's, like, you know.
Right.
And so I think I need to rethink that maybe and just see what I can do on my own. But it is empowering. Like, it's kind of this... I remember when I started doing it, it was like this weird thrill. Like, oh, I'm going to let myself actually do this now. And it's like, that's dumb. I've been doing this like a long time ago, you know. Yeah. And I was doing it a long time ago. As a kid, I was just doing all my own art, you know.
Right. Kids always draw, right? Do they not always draw? Do kids not, like, always draw?
Yeah, I think they always draw.
Until, like, you have, like, a classroom setting where there's, like, one kid that's, like, very obviously the best drawer, and it's always that when you're a kid, right? It's like, oh, he's a really good drawer. But until you have that situation, kids don't think about, like, not drawing pictures. Right? Yeah, like, they only learn not to once they see somebody who's, like, much better than them. They start to be confused about how that happens.
Yeah, and I think that's where that kind of that bravery, innocence thing comes in. I mean, it's not... I think when you're a kid, it doesn't take bravery or courage, because it's just, like, you're not aware of all the horrible things that can happen when you make something. But when you're an adult, it's kind of like... Yeah, you gotta rediscover the sort of just, I'm happy to make this thing, it makes me feel good, I'm gonna keep doing it thing.
Yeah.
And people are gonna kick you in the balls repeatedly because you're doing it, but you have to just find a way to not let that get to you.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess that's why kids learn better, right? Just generally, is they're not really afraid to
fall fail. In the face.
But also, you know what? People don't criticize children in the same way. You know, like a kid draws something and it looks bad. You never tell that kid your drawing's actually pretty bad, man.
Right. Yeah.
Like, no one tells a kid like don't quit your day job when they try something.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it's like, you know, it's hard. It's hard to hear it at any age, really. I'm lucky, like, most folks have not been, like, too negative on the art style of the Real Texas, but, honestly, how I feel about it is that it's not, like, I don't have, like, delusions about it. In other words, I like it, I think it works because it's consistent, and I did definitely work hard to, like, make it look good within its own kind of style. Mm-hmm. But when I look at like Spelunky or something, it's like the art is like on a whole other level, right? And so I don't have illusions about it in terms of how good it really is. It's just that it's what's working for me right now, you know? And so I can totally also see, like, I can see, like, wanting to work with, like, an artist who has the chops, right, to really, like, make something that looks really spectacular. I felt like the art in Spelunky, and I don't have an Xbox, so, like, I haven't played it, but of course I, like, watch everything online, and I felt the art in Spelunky was really, really amazing, because, like, that vector style, okay, for lack of a better word, is usually, for me, kind of soulless, but in Spelunky, it's, like, there's so much character, like, in all the little guys and the rocks and everything. It has like the soul of pixel art without being pixel art.
Yeah. I think the art style is perfect for what that game is. Like it knows that it's a video game.
Yeah.
Like the art style's not trying to dress it up to look like something. Like, it felt like in Aquaria we were kind of trying to dress it up more and hide the actual mechanics. Like, oh, this is supposed to look like a fish. Really, it's a circle that moves around. But in Spelunky, it felt a bit more like, no, this is a tile. Like, it's going to look, like, when you hit the wall and it breaks, it's going to look like a tile. A tile-shaped hole will be there. We're not going to dress it up to make it look like a, you know, and I thought that was really cool. And and I've seen people criticizing the art style, right?
Right.
And that kind of, that's kind of the thing. Like, people are going to criticize anything. They're going to love things and they're going to hate things. Like, and this is something that took a lot of time and has all this detail and it's stylized, and there's some people who just outright hate it and can't stand it, you know?
Really? People don't like Spelunky art?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some people being like, why didn't they leave an option to play with pixel art?
Right.
Because pixel art is better, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, people saying I can't play it because it's... I don't know how honest they're being, but...
I'm sorry, I'm just dying here. I'm just like, I'm picturing somebody like, I can't play this. Like, it's not pixels. Like, I can't do that. I just can't. I tried, but it's like somebody like, they're like grieving, right?
Yeah.
They're legitimately suffering.
Well, I find it hard to know if this is the case or somebody actually is legitimately. Like, they can't handle it for whatever... Like, because I've had reactions like that to things where just, I can't... It just doesn't work for me, but... Or if it's the case of someone who's just, upset at the game for whatever other reason is latching on to this as a way to vent, but...
They're jealous about how awesome it is. And
stuff
But it could also be legitimately that, like... I mean, particularly with Spelunky, I can see, like, if you played that original version, you know, ad infinitum... Maybe you can't play the proper Spelunky now because you're too wired up for the old one. Maybe it is hard. I don't know. Yeah. I'm laughing because it's just like I'm just picturing like somebody suffering, you know.
Yeah, but just from a
or something kind of ridiculous. But at the same time, I'm not discounting that it's like legitimate. I mean, there's like. There's some games I guess I can't think of any games that I like can't play because of some reason like that, but I'm sure they are there. I just can't think of any personally, but there's some movies maybe, I can't watch. There's some movies it's just like I can't do this. Like and I haven't even seen it, but I know the Richard Gere version of what's that movie? It's like this amazing Japanese movie with dancing. And then Richard Gere made this version. Seriously, the Japanese version is like one of the greatest movies I have ever seen in my life. It's so, so good. And then they like remade it for an American audience with Richard Gere. I can see myself like not being able to watch that.
I guess an example for me recently would be that, like, I forget what it's called, Steve Carell, and it's like about the end of the world. But there's a Canadian movie called Last Night that came out in the 90s, right around the same time as Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Right.
But, it's about the end of the world, but it's very small scale, and it's like my favorite movie of all time.
I've seen it. It's the one, it's like in Toronto, and there's like a meteor getting, and it gets brighter and brighter throughout the movie or something.
Yeah, I don't think they ever explain what it is, but it's getting brighter. And
that was a cool movie. I saw that. That's like really that so, leaves you with a certain feeling, like it's kind of
It's an interesting ending, and so, but you know, seeing this other movie where it's kind of a similar premise but done in a different way, and I'm just like, nope, we can't can't even it. Entertain it.
Nope. Yep.
But yeah.
I like now there's a funny twist here, which is like, so that movie's called Last Night, is it called? The Last Night or something? The
one you're Last
talking
Night,
about?
Yeah.
Last Night. And I'm talking about this Japanese movie that I can't think of what it is. It's something like, can I like Google right now?
Yeah, you can go Google it.
Because anybody who's like,
we'll play the lounge
listening
music
this far in,
people are used ballroom, to the
Japanese
night,
amazing movie. Well, Google's really good about telling you what movie you're thinking. Shall We Dance? Okay, the Japanese Shall We Dance is like mind-blowingly good. And so, okay, this is what all I'm trying to say, and you're gonna be like, this is totally pointless, but whatever. So you like this movie called Last Night, okay, and you, but you don't like the remake. And I like this movie called Shall We Dance, but I don't like the Richard Gere version. But Richard Gere is in a movie called First Night, which I actually do really like. That's all I wanted to say. Sorry.
Nice.
That's all I had to say about that. I really like First Night. It's kind of like a Arthurian thing.
But the Richard Gere version of Spelunky is garbage.
Yeah. I can't even watch YouTube videos of the Richard Gere version of Spelunky.
Why
I feel like Sony would do a commercial with like Richard Gere playing Spelunky.
Yeah. It might be kind of awesome, I don't know.
I don't know.
Another interesting point about Spelunky that kind of ties into what we were talking about, just how you kind of remind me of Derek a bit, like working with Derek on Aquarius, kind of like I was the one who was always like, this game is going to be horrible, and he was always like, no, I think it'll be okay, you know, like just calm down.
Right.
And he's very, very much the kind of like that kind of approach, I think. It's the same kind of approach that you have. And that's why the art in Spelunky looks different.
Right.
You know, like I could see other people trying to make a high-res version of Spelunky and it not being as creative.
Yeah.
You know, because he really had this neat way of looking at the art style. Anyway, I saw an interview with him where he said that he did no marketing for the game because they were too busy finishing it.
Yeah.
And and then he said something to the effect of, like, we're making a game that we want people to play for a long time. So it's not about hitting a launch date. It's about, well, we're going to get this good game out and it'll market itself. Over. And I was like, well, that's totally Derek and that's totally awesome and takes huge balls. And but at the same time, it's also very laid back and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then recently there was a post today on Gamma Sutra about the actual sales of Spelunky, and they're lower than
I saw that.
Fez and Braid or something. But, I mean, they're still high. They're still making money and everything. The reviews are really good. And I just felt like, I don't think Derek's going to care too much. Like, that's the impression I got. And like it sucks a bit, but it's like it's going to do very well over the period of time it's going to get released on all these other platforms, and
it's
going to be remembered as a classic game, I think. I think it has a good shot at that.
I saw him in an interview, and he said that it was like the interviewer asked him why he hated people because he made this like really hard game, right? He's why do you hate humanity? But then he said, no, I'm trying to like give humanity its greatest gift, right? And like, what was awesome is he wasn't being pompous, right? But he also wasn't really being like sarcastic or like stupid about it either. That just like came out. That mm-hmm. I think is, you know, like a beautiful thing. It's like obviously pours so much love into it that's how he feels about it. And I think that's I just think that's beautiful. I mean, it's like, I mean, most people would not. I mean, I think if you can internalize that, right, that you want to like give humanity its greatest gift, right? You internalize that, and then that kind of inspires you to work. I mean, that's awesome. beats the pants off, like, well, I broke it down and I spent this many hours on my game and I only made this much money, therefore I'm making this much per hour.
It's like, this diet and I've got an upright desk and
I see so many analysis like that right now lately too. It's like people breaking it down, you know, here's the hard numbers, right? It's like, okay, well, whatever. It's like, if you're in it like for those reasons, then you gotta break down those numbers. But I don't know, I think it's like, if you just mostly want to make a great game and then want to support yourself doing it, you do need to, you know, make money doing it, but I don't think you need to like optimize the money that you're making, right? There's like a big difference in my mind.
Yeah, I remember John Blow saying, like, I, you know, should have been getting paid this much for this many hours, and I was just like, I felt like if I did that for me, I'd be like pretty depressed, you know, but I'm not, because I don't care about that, you know, like I understand that and I understand the value of doing that exercise, right. But to me it doesn't, it's like, no, I just want to be able to do it.
I don't see the value of it because, in this kind of context, I don't see the value of doing that because, why does everything, like, everything is not reducible to money, right? It's just really a tool to keep, like, keep the planet spinning, pretty much. It's the only purpose it exists for. And so, everything does not reduce to money. There's plenty of things we can easily say, right, don't reduce to money. Like a human life, right? Like, okay, so there's, like, insurance guys somewhere that have it all figured out. But the point is, we understand that, right? Like, it's not a transaction. Hopefully we understand that. For the most part, we do. But, like, you know, like, you're not going to, like, live any longer if you get paid more per hour, necessarily. You'll live longer if you can, like, afford to eat better, say, or have less stress, or, you know, if you're really poor, you might live a lot shorter because you might be more stressed out working in harsher conditions, right? So, you know, having a certain amount of money definitely will affect, you know, things in a real way. But then, you know, past a certain point, it doesn't matter anymore. Past a certain point, it's not likely to change the general course of those things that are important in your life, right? So that's why, I mean, for me, it's like, well, you know, and that's, I think, really important too, because game development takes so long. Right, and so if you allow yourself to get like pigeonhole your life into existing for your game, right, then that becomes a tremendous like emotional burden because you spend 5 years, you know. So the way that I try to look at it, and I honestly see like other developers who like struggle with this too. So the way I try and look at it is, okay, if this game takes 5 years, it could suck at the end, right? Like, the real Texas took about 5 years. And, you know, I'm really happy with it, but I don't know that I would have been, right? I could have just easily been terrible. And so, or not finished, or never released, or whatever. So the thing is, okay, what did I do over those 5 years besides work on this game, right? Like, my day job is reasonably satisfying. Like, you know, I think I did that job for enough years that it's time to move on regardless. But I did some traveling, which was amazing. I got married in there. Like, those are like, so it's like, if the game had sucked, I wouldn't be like, I look back and go, oh, that 5 years was a wash.
Right.
Because, like, well, it'd be like, oh, whatever. Like, I know that I spent an ungodly number of hours on this and stuff, but at no time or on few occasions did I say, like, turn down going out with friends to work on the game, let's say. Like, that's just, in my mind, on the one hand, you hear all these people say, oh, you have to sacrifice, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, if somebody wants to do something, I got to look at it as in, you know, this stupid thing I'm working on may not turn out anyways, so so I will go out for a drink or for a bike ride or whatever opportunities arise, you know. And there's always enough hours that you just have to sit in front of the computer where no one wants to do anything anyway. So if you have an opportunity to do something like legitimately fun, I think for myself, I always try to do it. And then that mitigates the risk that I'll have spent 5 years on a shitty game and want to kill myself, you know? Like,
right, yeah.
So, I don't know. That, I guess that's my long answer to why I don't think it makes sense to just sit back and be like, how many hours did I spend? How much money did I make? Because it's just like you should try and see it in like a holistic sense. Maybe like, what's your life while you're doing this? What's going on?
Indeed. I think this is sort of tangentially related, but I was in a debate with my sister over some drinks. She's going into creative writing and stuff, just cool.
That's awesome, yeah.
I'm trying to get her to work on a interactive fiction thing with me.
Yeah?
This is a really cool concept, but I'm finding it hard to get her to work on it just because she's really busy. But anyway, we were having a conversation just about sort of art and stuff, and she was talking about this project she knows. There's some guy's growing crystals, and he's like writing poetry some based on these crystals somehow, and she talks about it a lot, and but she doesn't really understand the details of it, and I was just, I had enough drinks, so I was just like, what is the point? Like, and I'm really open-minded about art and stuff, but I'm sort of...
So was this, like, so is she writing a story about this guy, or is this an actual guy? Or
no, it's an actual guy. He's actually growing crystals and somehow writing something based on this. Like, I don't understand the relation, but there's some... Like, he's generating right. something out, and then... And I was just like, why? You know, and I just... To me, it... Like, I sort of get why it's cool, but at the same time, I just was like, how does he... I said, how does he justify his existence? And everyone laughed at me, and I was like, oh, yeah, I get it, yeah. But seriously, like, just because, like, the questions I've been asking myself and the
right.
things that I've stopped working on seem to make more sense than that. So I was kind of just trying to compare, like, you know, how does this guy... do what he's doing, and how does he get up every day and get excited for what he's doing? How does he not stop and think, well, there's people who are building bridges and working in hospitals, and I'm right. growing crystals and writing poems. Like,
right.
But then today I was watching some Stephen Fry stuff.
Yeah.
And he mentioned this quote or referenced Brain Fart. The guy he always references, Oscar Wilde.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Saying that, you know, art seems like this frivolous thing. Why would anyone ever fund it? Because he was at this art fundraiser.
Okay.
And he said, well, love is kind of a purposeless thing, a useless
right.
thing. And wine is kind of a useless thing.
Right.
And art is the love and wine of life. It's the extra thing that makes life worth living. It's the
right.
extra silly things. And that was interesting to me because that's something that I've always known, but recently I've sort of forgotten it. I've been kind of caught up in this, like, you know, how is this going to objectively be valuable to enough people?
Right.
And it's like, that's not the right approach. There's a certain silliness and frivolity to things that are endearing.
Yeah.
That isn't really quantifiable.
Yeah, I like that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And so, to me, Real Texas reminds me of that, where there's a lot of silliness in the initial part of the game that was really refreshing for me. You know, because
right.
it was, because I've been looking at things this way, and kind of like, what is the purpose of this and that? And it was just like, oh, things are just happening.
Right.
And they're very entertaining and they're funny. And
right.
But then they're actually still they're still building. They're not totally arbitrary. It's not like Family Guy or something.
Right.
But yeah, that was a cool way to sort of remember that whole feeling of.
That's good. Yeah, no, and I like in a bigger sense.
Dude, the cops are on to you.
I know, it's crazy. I live on like a, I hear a lot of police here. I live on the fifth floor and next to like a major sort of thoroughfare. So,
nice.
No, I think like you've got a, I think you're right. I mean, like think about. I mean, I once wanted to be a composer, like a music composer, like a classical music composer, like in the vein of Beethoven or Tchaikovsky or whatever. And I have like two really close friends that are actually doing that pretty successfully. But what was I gonna say? Basically, all I was gonna say is like, on the one hand, like. You think about these great artists, right, like Beethoven, and you think, oh, I'd love to be, like, create, you know, like, a symphony like Beethoven did, or whatever. But there's a problem with that, which is, like, well, okay, but, like, back up a second, like, what was it to Beethoven at the time? Okay. So, why did he, say, put into music what he put into music? Like, what was it actually like to be Beethoven, right? And I think it was a little bit more day-to-day than probably we tend to, like, think of him as being, like, this immortalized figure. So, you know, he started his career, like, right, as a performer, as, like, a renowned pianist in Vienna, right? And so, like, the stuff he was writing then is probably just to show off his skill. And then maybe at some point... you know, at some point, certainly he enjoyed like huge popularity, right? And so that's very enjoyable in your day-to-day existence. And you know, and then he had some issues like with his hearing and stuff. And so then maybe at that point, you know, at that point he's older than I am. So I don't know what it's like to necessarily. Actually, is he older than I am? I don't know. It's maybe about the same age that I am now. But like, maybe he's. I guess all I'm trying to say is, like, it's like the, it's like, you know, like, there's Beethoven the statue,
mm-hmm.
right, that we can all, like, pray to and stuff, which works, I mean, definitely if you pray to Beethoven, you'll get presents and stuff at Christmas, it's pretty rad. That was the tradition in my household, it's like, for Christmas, pray to Beethoven, and he'll bring you some presents on Christmas morning. Pretty awesome. So there's Beethoven the statue, right? But then you think, like, okay, but what was it actually like to be him, right? And it's like, well, it's probably, like, a number of things, you know? But the point is just... The point I'm trying to make is just, like, I think maybe, like, he wasn't... Maybe, like, we think, oh, naturally he'd be concerned about how his music was seen after he was dead. But it's like, I don't know about that, because, like, once you're dead, right? And it's nice to think, oh, you know, people will enjoy this for years to come. But maybe it's okay just to be like, no. Like, what's it to me right now? Like, what's it, like, am I crazy and neurotic with my crystals here? And, like, it's like, just what I want to do. It's like, I don't, like, it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just kind of on a much smaller scale you can look at it, like... Eventually it will get churned under with the rest of, like, culture, and just, like, most of it will turn into fertilizer and be forgotten. Some of it will be immortalized, but in a way that's almost worse, right? Like, it's fantastic to listen to Beethoven and say really enjoy it, but it's, like, it's a weird kind of torture to go to a concert where you feel like people are there for some kind of strange edification that they don't... Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, what would be worse? Like, I mean, it's obviously it's better to have things, you know, remembered that you've created, but at the same time, you want it to still be relevant. You know, nobody wants to see something, you know, sort of stripped of its life or turned into a symbol it has no
like
soul anymore, right?
I find a lot of classics tend to be things that feel completely fresh when you listen to them or experience them or watch them.
Yeah.
Specifically, like, I was reading about the movie The Manchurian Candidate, and Roger Ebert said that about it. Like, when you watch it, it sort of feels like this movie that's taking all these risks, and it feels totally fresh. I thought that was really interesting, because that's the exciting thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, and that's true. Like, I mean, I feel that way. Like, you listen to, like, Beethoven or it doesn't, I mean, I'm using, like, I'm hitting, harping on this one thing, but yeah, you experience some kind of art that's, like, really great, and it does feel fresh and relevant. But you know what? It can feel that way, but also, like, it's, this is harsh, but it's hard to find a less relevant cultural institution than your local Philharmonic. I don't mean your local Philharmonic, but at least our local Philharmonic. That's a brutal thing to say, but you know, I look at, say, their programming, and it's just, like, so little actually new music. Yeah. And I know they can't, because they won't survive.
Well,
it's not their fault. They would probably love to do nothing but new music, Canadian composers. I would, too. Honestly, I would. But that's the problem. It would be, like, you and me.
Well,
you'd be in Winnipeg and I'd be in Calgary. That'd be that. Right. You have the Winnipeg New Music Festival, right? Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I've never actually been, but I was going to the symphony for a while, and I would literally fall asleep with the old school classical stuff. And I like it, but you know, it was kind of like, it was almost like I could predict what was going to come up in the piece, because it's just know where it's going to go, and then. One time they played some piece by some composer in Winnipeg, and he was actually there in the audience, and it was just, like, different, amazing emotion. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, here we go, like, we're doing something now, and then it was back to the whatever, you know, I was like, it's good, but...
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and so it's, you know...
And it sucks, because it's so magical when you actually have, like, a live music performance of something, I mean... Right. When I was in band class, we were doing new music. So, it was, like, being inside that and actually doing it. And so, like, I have that kind of appreciation of it.
Right.
And then that might kind of change my outlook on it a bit. But, I think that's sort of cool. Part of it is knowing what it's like to play something new like that. Or even to write something, and then getting to sort of experience that from the outside in a way.
I mean, it changes it from something that's just like you're supposed to like, to something that is interesting, right? If there's like a living human being, you know, I can guarantee you, if like Beethoven or really any of these composers were alive today. You know, reanimated or whatever, or like came down from heaven, like on Christmas or Easter or whatever, that there would be like a resurgent interest in their music, right? It's like if Beethoven were actually like conducting or playing that piano concerto, they would have no problem selling out, right? And the sad thing is, there's lots of like Beethovens out there, right? There really are. And I mean, frankly, I think for exactly that reason, most contemporary music that is vital is popular, right? So I don't mean like necessarily like Nicki Minaj or whatever, but I mean like it's popular idiom, like it's guitars or it's electronic or whatever, right? It's not played on like, you know, violins and violas and stuff. But I guess like, what a weird tangent, but all I'm saying is, like, you know, for me, that's something I guess I, like, think about a lot, is just, like, when you talk about, like, art, like, how will it survive into the future, and I guess just kind of felt like, well, maybe the now is more important, really. Maybe, like, the future is not so bright compared to the now, even if you are Beethoven, and even if you do write, like, these fantastic symphonies, you know? like as cool as it is, and I am energized by like that, you know, particularly, you know, certain composers, but certainly it was better back then, right?
I don't know, like when I think a bit more in a more self-centered way and kind of thinking about like, okay, what, like how do I feel about my own stuff,
right,
outliving me to some degree, maybe.
Yeah,
it's kind of like all I really care, like if it was just one person 50 years from now, or well, hopefully I'll still be alive in 50 years. Let's be a bit more optimistic.
Right. Let's say one person in 5 years after, yeah, I'm gone.
Let's, yeah, say maybe 60 years. however many years. And presumably there's still some technology around that can play,
yeah,
Aquaria or something. If there's just one person who bothers to find it for whatever reason,
yeah,
I would feel pretty good about that. Like, I won't be around to feel anything, but I've done that with weird things personally. Like, I've gone and found some really obscure thing, some old game, and I'll be like really curious about who made it, and I'll go,
right,
try and look them up and find out some information about them, and it's not really something that ultimately matters, I guess, but I find comfort in that for some reason, like just that there's some, you know, some, yeah, some kind of connection to a generation beyond your own, you know, like that seems cool to me.
Yeah,
even if it's a really minor sort of thing and only one person gets it, then I'm kind of happy anyway.
Yeah, well, I think that's right too. I think, like, I don't know, maybe I'm too like harsh on myself somehow, like in not entertaining those kind of like ideas, but and I think it's like ultimately it's pretty reasonable to expect that something you create will be like enjoyed by people down the road.
Well, there's all these things you don't hear about too, you know, like there's all these, like, people discover things in really weird ways, and you don't, like, with the internet we're kind of, it kind of feels like we can know everything about how people play the game. Like, you can even do the stat tracking thing, but there's also just, right, like, okay, there's this YouTube video, and then there's, right, this review, and these people talking on these forums, but there's all these conversations happening outside of that, and sometimes you don't hear about them until,
right,
years later and someone sends you an email.
Right.
Or you talk to someone and they're like, oh yeah, I heard this, you know, person mentioned this at this place. And it, so it might even be the case where, like, in somebody's family, your game is like a big deal.
Right.
And it gets passed on through the family. It's just this thing, like, oh, we remember playing this. And,
right,
it, you know, and it might just be one family. But for them, it would be such a cool thing. You know, like, I don't know, in my family, these little things like that that we discover and we just think they're super awesome and talk about them and everything, or remember them.
Right.
And that seems somehow important to me. I don't know.
Right. That's awesome. No, I never thought of it in those terms, but it is, yeah, that's nice. It's comforting, right? I mean, it's nice to think. It's certainly an incredible feeling when somebody tells you that they're enjoying it, you know? I got a piece of fan art, and it's like the best thing ever. I literally,
yeah,
stared at it for like an hour. Or more. I have it, like, printed off and framed. But, yeah. No, that's true. It's very satisfying to think about.
Fan art is amazing because it's, like, that's where you get to sort of see that your ideas are alive in somebody else's head, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, like, mind, kind of a mind fuck because you're like, I didn't draw that. Like, what? Like, what?
Yeah.
No. I didn't. No, I didn't. What? And like, yeah, it was truly weird. I mean, it was truly like humbling and strange and amazing just to get that one piece of fan art. Is like, you know, and I know there's like lots of Aquaria fan art, so I know you maybe are a little more used to it, but at the same time,
it's still really cool. Like, recently I was looking at mods. And there's just,
right,
somebody made Super Meat Boy inside of Aquaria. The whole, like, replay system. I don't even know how they did that. Like, they did it through the Lua scripting, I think. I don't think,
wow,
they modded the engine.
Wow.
But somebody's even working on, like, Well, there's been this huge mod that has all this original art in it and everything, but then they're also working on a sequel because we're not going to make one.
Right.
And they're like, okay, well, I hate this part of the ending of the game, so we're going to write something that explains why this is not as horrible as we think it is and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, like, they know the game way better than I do now.
Yeah.
Like, they understand the world and the story. Like, I don't remember much about it. Like, I remember certain bits, but I couldn't make a sequel unless I went back and researched everything. Like,
right.
And they're keeping that world alive.
Right.
Which is so weird. Like, it's really cool. But yeah, it I guess because it's sort of been so many years, it doesn't feel...
Right.
Strange. It more just sort of feels cool. But I think if that had happened like 5 months after the game came out, it would have felt a little weird because it would be like, oh, this is our thing. What are you doing with our thing? You're not supposed to go and make your own version of our thing. But now it's just like, yeah, whatever.
That is like an awesome thing about games is the way that can happen, right? And people can can like take and just like do different. Well, different things and extend it and really like just kind of like and also like I find that something sort of unique like to video games as like a medium like you do see that with novels for sure like with fan fiction so maybe it's not really unique but it's cool when it happens thinking about like DayZ you know it's like this new thing. It's like an Arma 2 mod. I don't even know what Arma 2 is. It's like, I don't even understand. Like, what is it? Is it like a first-person shooter? Is it like, what? I just don't even know. Why is it called Arma 2? What is Arma 1? What does Arma stand for? Is it an acronym? Is it armor? It's like a short term for armor. It's like some kind of military term that I'd know if I was like at all up with this stuff. Like, I don't even know what it is. And now they've actually advertised Arma 2. As being, I saw this today, it's just like a sticker on it now when you go into the store that says this is what you need to buy for DayZ. Right? It's like it's awesome. I know what DayZ is. I know I have to own Arma 2 somehow to play it. But yeah, no, it's totally cool. It's totally cool. And I mean, isn't that what like Portal was, right? Basically, it's like some kind of like student mod.
It was the student project that got picked up. But, yeah, like Natural Selection was a Half-Life mod, and Natural Selection 2 is now its own engine and everything. And,
okay.
Yeah, but it's something that always it's just sort of like the creative process. It's always remixing things that exist, even though it's just sort of like the granularity of the things that you're remixing or the obvious nature versus the more mysterious nature of it, but it's always like you're always taking things that exist and you're just kind of recombining them.
Yeah. I think that's maybe that's a good reason not to feel too like it's necessary to sort of innovate all the time. Maybe that's a good reason to sort of like justify like internally. Mm-hmm. I mean like because I have that too, right, where it's like you don't want to like just do what it's already been done, but at the same time, it's like so hard to think of anything new at all.
Yeah.
Like even one new idea is like
well, anything
so hard.
New that's good.
Yeah, anything new that's good. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. So. Yeah.
It's kind of like the idea that there's only so many stories you can tell.
Yeah.
Which is sort of depressing in a way, and it's
I don't
sort
really
of true in others, you know. And it's I wonder how true it is. I wonder
I
how much of it is cultural, but.
I don't really think it's true at all. I take kind of like issue with it because it's like it's all it is it's just saying like we've created like 9 different boxes or however many they are and we can fit any story into one of those boxes, right? But it's like it's just like reductionist in a really bad way. Like it's not, you know, like you don't do that with anything else. You don't say there's only 4 type of person, or when you do, you recognize that you're like not properly. That's not the whole story, right? It's only like 3 types of life, right?
Well, one
plants,
way to sort of
rocks,
think about it, the tongue or whatever can only detect I forget how many things it is, but like 5 things.
The tongue, all right, right.
So it's like any flavor is just a combination of the same five things, but it still generates all these right. flavors. So like, who cares that it's
exactly
like it doesn't matter. It's just okay. That's really the detail doesn't. Of how it works. But okay, and so with stories, maybe there are only nine to however many types.
Yeah, I don't
but
even then know
if
how many
there's are. Enough variation on top of that, or enough blending, and it's like you don't care, you don't notice. You're like, eh, yeah, it feels like a new story. Like Star yeah, Wars yeah. is the hero's journey, but it feels like its own thing.
Yeah, and it is its own thing. It's clearly mm-hmm. is. I mean, and so is every other most every other story. Like some are very formulaic, but I'll tell you, like one really cool story I once read, which I don't think has a good parallel, is like science fiction story about Mars, and in the future on Mars, there are berries, okay, and there's like blue, white, black, red, green berries, and like the white ones kind of just make you mellow, and everybody eats the white ones. The red ones do something else; they make you hyperactive or something, and you know, other ones make you like have intense waves of pleasure, and then like there's like then it's like the green berries are like totally forbidden because they give you like a really bad high. Okay, it's like an LSD trip that is guaranteed to be bad. And so then this guy goes into like Mars. He goes like to the seedy area of the cities, like trying to get to the green berries. And then he like ends up like going into like a pleasure dome or something. And then he connects with a guy. And then he goes on a train. And then finally meets the guy who can like let him try green berries. And then he like tries it, and it's crazy. And then that's the end of the story. Like, I don't know. Like, like, right?
It feels that's funny.
Like, I suppose it's your, like, but what? Like, I don't know. It's, you know, you can do that, right? You can yeah. be like, oh, it's just whatever. But at the same time, it's like, that doesn't really tell you anything at all about how effed up this story was, right?
Right.
It's kind of like the real thing about this story is, like, it's clearly written by someone who's done, like, a lot of drugs and has a very specific vision for Mars. Okay, like right. this was like an obscenely well realized Mars, okay, and all just a base about like trying these different drugs. It was a really cool story. And the author, I don't think, really wrote anything else. It's just like I could be wrong, but I wasn't able to ever find anything else by that author. But
yeah, I think that's very relevant to kind of what we were talking about before with your inventory system. And going back to the idea that you started with really early on of in the conversation of the idea of being able to type in
right,
commands
right.
into that system, which I just wanted to go back to for a second because
sure.
that stood out for me as one of those things that was not strictly functionally necessary, but felt cool. Because
yeah.
it feels like you're breaking the system or working around the system or doing something special. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's still something that's totally handled by the game, but because
right.
it's a different interface, it just feels like, oh, this is fancy. You know? Like,
yeah,
this,
and
this
you know what? And it's totally just straight ripped off Ultima 6. I just liked it in Ultima 6, and I always wanted to make a game with that in it. And I like what they did with it in Ultima 6. And then in Ultima 7, they brought in a regular keyboard system where you just get the keyboards and you click on them. And I like didn't like that because like this whole extra dimension of like what could happen, right? And the feeling of like actually discovering a keyword is super cool. And there's like some really, you know, there's some stuff that you like, if you figure out, and most people haven't figured out, the characters will confirm for you, right? So if you figure out, I don't know, I don't want to like give anything away, but if you figure something out, and you like decide to like, you know, check with the character whether your intuition or whether you're just crazy or not, they'll like confirm that you're actually right, you understood that, right? And so, and there's certain places where like the keyword system's like just handy to use as a developer as well, you know, like just as a game designer, it's handy. It can kind of like gives you ideas for interesting puzzles and stuff. But yeah, it's like a it's like a rough around the edges thing, right? Like this YouTuber X, you know, like he really got hung up on it, you know. Most of his YouTube videos are just him like trying keywords, and it's like, well, it doesn't really work that way, right? Like most of the time you don't use it. It's only rarely that you really use it. But for whatever reason he's zeroed in on that. And that's fine. Right? Like it's valid and everything, but it's doesn't surprise me that he didn't like really enjoy the game because he's kind of like fighting it in a way.
Yeah.
So I mean, but that's the risk, right? It's like if you put that in there, it's gonna happen for some people. If you make a game nonlinear, some people are gonna get lost.
Yeah, if you don't have
a hint system, people are gonna feel directionless. It's like, well, but that's what you.
Yeah,
and that's what you can do.
It seems like these things are all things that help the mystery of the game. They kind of contribute to the sense that it's bigger than it really is.
Right. Which
is something I really like. I really like, oh, there could be some really strange case where you type something in this box and something really unexpected happens.
Yeah.
Or maybe if I go around this corner, there'll be some secret screen that I don't know about.
Right.
You know, and games like recent Final Fantasies and things like that where you can see a map and you know exactly where you're going and it's always linear, it's still doing a lot of the same things as an older Final Fantasy or other game would do, but it's just that extra layer of like the mystery of what could happen that contributes to the feeling that this is a real world that's kind of unpredictable, you know?
And then
you have the trade-off of some players fall into that hole that it's kind of like a big hole next to the player that's like, what could be in this, you know, what could be out here, you don't know, and then some players jump in the hole and they're lost. But for the other players, it's just they're kind of lurking and they're kind of aware of it and they're kind of like, oh, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, and actually I tried, you know, like one of the things I was careful to do is not have like too many extraneous sort of like do-nothing actions. Because I wanted people to, like, if they were trying that, to figure out pretty quickly that, like, okay, like, most of the things I type in are going to have, like, no effect. And I should just click on these keywords most of the time. But, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's like if you're a mainstream developer with, like, a huge budget, you can't risk that. You can't risk, like, losing people on that. But when you're small, you can, so you might as well, right? You don't... I mean, that's my view. It's like... you might as well like try something really kind of unconventional or crazy because ultimately that's actually what's going to like differentiate you as a small developer.
Yeah, it's beneficial. Right?
It's actually beneficial, yeah. People look and they're like, oh, Ultima 6, I love that game, right? Even though it's like 10 people. It's like, well, that 10 people makes a big difference to me, right? So, you know.
So... since we've been going for almost 2.5 hours, we should probably wrap up.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any advice for people who are just starting out, or people who are working on stuff and maybe are stuck?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think, like, biggest advice would be just, like, balance, like, in life, because... and again, it's like, well, whatever. Some people aren't going to be like that, right? Some people are going to dedicate their whole life to finishing the, you know, ultimate game, and that's going to be what they do, and that's what they want to do. That's their destiny or whatever. But, like, my advice would be, like, just, like, don't be afraid to balance your life between things. And then, really well put. No, like, just, like, you know, like, try and enjoy life outside of just working on it and broaden your horizons, but, like, maybe just, like, do other stuff and interact with people if that's what you like to do, or just go for walks if that's what you like to do, or whatever. Like, make sure that, like, after you've finished your game in 5 years, if it sucks, you're not disappointed with the 5 years that you just spent making it. Because I think it's a terrible emotional burden to feel like your entire life is tied up in one project, right? Mm-hmm. Even, there's very little else, I think, that you can, like, endeavor towards that takes so long and can take so much out of you and not work out in the end. You know, like the Mars rover is an example. Like, it's 10 years of people's lives, and it could have blown up on the launch pad, right? It's only, you're saying in this documentary, there's only a 99% chance it would even get off the launch pad. So there's like a 1% chance that it would just like blow up.
Yeah.
That the rocket would just blow up, right? And they figured there's, you know, even after all their testing, there was about a 99% chance they'd land, which I actually thought was like, wow, that's pretty high compared to what it looks like it would be. But still, I mean, there's an example of something you could spend 10 years and have it come to basically nothing. But, you know, games, it's like, yeah, they can take like a lot out of you. So just try and don't get too wrapped up, I guess, in like the one project, and try and branch out. And I don't know, is that like realistically, like, does that make even sense? Like,
yeah, I think kind of what you're saying is don't get lost in the work. You can, well, yeah, I would add to that, like, if you're just working all the time, you're not really going to have the perspective that helps you make something.
That's right. You're not going to have any interesting ideas if you're only ever behind a computer. Like, I mean, and you'll do that enough anyways, right? Like, you'll work enough no matter what. I mean, you're going to have all that time to put in. So if you have a chance to do something interesting, go and do it, and just like shelve it for, you know, don't worry about it. If it's, you know, it's not going to change it whether you work like another day on it or every day on it. I mean, I don't know. It's just like particular advice, but it's probably not applicable to everybody. And then, I don't know. I hate giving advice generally because it's like, whatever. That's like maybe advice I'd give to myself as a younger person, like personally.
Maybe
like,
your advice is don't give advice.
Maybe that's my advice. Don't give advice. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for talking, and check out the Real Texas. And I was going to plug the URL, and I just realized that would be really stupid because this is after like 2.5 hours.
I should say I really appreciate the way, like, after like we go on a tangent for an hour and a half, you manage to like keep bringing it back. I'm like, that's very polite of you. It's kind of like, yeah, but no.
The show's all about tangents, so.
Yeah, I like that. That's what I.
We love to ramble.
Yep. If it wasn't 2.5 hours long, people would be like disappointed.
Yeah.
I know personally, like, when I listen to it, it's usually like, I don't know, it's just kind of like playing, and then usually I don't make it all the way through because it's like so long. I just like, it's not that I'm not interested, it's just like, oh, I have to like leave the house now to like, go on an airplane somewhere or something, or go eat something.
Yeah.
But anyways, it was totally fun talking to you for this time, and yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We'll do this again sometime.
For sure. It's like, yeah, this was awesome. It was really fun to do this.
Alright, peace out.
Yep.